Okay, let's unpack this. It is Saturday, February 14th, 2026. Happy Valentine's Day. And if you're looking for a date right now, well, looking at the data on my desk, you might statistically have better luck with a bot than a human this year.
That is a depressing yet statistically accurate way to open this deep dive.
It's where we are. But yeah. Seriously, just look at the state of things. We are drowning in what the industry is now calling AI slop.
Oh, yeah.
You open your feed and it's just noise, generated images that look a bit off, hallucinating bots, endless scrolling through content that feels like it was made by a machine for a machine. It's overwhelming.
It is saturation. I think slop is pretty much the technical term at this point. We've really reached peak noise.
Exactly. But we aren't here to just complain. We are here because a massive report just landed from Teakan Game, and they are drawing a hard line in the sand. They're calling it a pivot to strategic Sundays. Starting tomorrow, February 15th, basically they're saying, stop consuming the noise. Stop being a passive node.
Start thinking like an architect.
Yes. And they use this phrase that I think is going to define our entire year. Cognitive sovereignty.
That phrase, cognitive sovereignty. It's incredibly heavy, but it is so necessary. It implies that right now, in early 2026, we don't really have ownership over our own attention. We're just processing agents.
Right.
This report is basically a manifesto on how to take that control back. It's about understanding the machinery so you aren't just crushed by it.
And to do that, we have to understand the battlefield. And this report, it covers the whole board. We're talking about Elon Musk effectively buying the sky over Vietnam.
Yeah.
A spy novel situation between OpenAI and DeepSeek involving what are basically poison pills. An AI that doesn't just answer you, it emotionally resonates with you.
It sounds like sci-fi, but this is just Q1. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, what we're actually seeing in this report is it's the formalization of the split.
The split.
The internet, that global unified village we were promised, it's effectively gone. We are looking at a bifurcated world. You have the Western O1 ecosystem, and you have the Eastern Dubao DeepSeek sphere.
And the rules of physics are completely different in each one.
Completely.
Okay, that is a massive claim. So let's test it. Let's dive right into the physical layer. Starlink and Vietnam. The report calls this opening the sky gates.
This is fascinating because it's not just about getting Wi-Fi in a coffee shop. Starlink has officially entered Vietnam.
And the economic projections are just staggering.
We are looking at a projected boost to Vietnam's digital GDP of 2.5% by the end of this year.
2.5%. That is huge for a single infrastructure upgrade. You usually see that kind of growth over, what, a decade of laying cables.
It's massive. And the market responded immediately. SpaceX stock jumped 4% on the secondary market the moment it dropped.
But you have to ask why now? I mean, Starlink has been around. What changed?
The hardware. The report points directly to the Gen 3 mini terminals.
These aren't the big dishes you mount on a roof in Ohio. These are the backpack-sized ones.
Right, but it's not just the size, it's the power draw. These new units are 40% more power efficient.
40%? Wow.
That is the game changer. Because they're so efficient, they can run on simple, cheap solar grids.
So we're talking about rural, remote areas?
Yeah.
Places that had zero reliable connection.
The Vietnamese highlands, yeah. Suddenly, they have gigabit speed.
Taking Game calls this Silicon Democracy. I love that term. It's like geography doesn't matter anymore. If you have a solar panel in this little dish, you're in the game.
I get the optimism. I really do. But I have to push back a bit on democracy. There is a massive trade-off happening here.
What's that?
The report calls it a strategic sacrifice. Think about it. Vietnam has historically been very protective of its information borders.
Okay.
By letting Starlink in at this scale, the government is effectively outsourcing a critical layer of their national infrastructure to a U.S. company, to Elon Musk.
So they're trading control for velocity.
Precisely. And that's the dilemma for every developing nation in 2026. You want to compete in the AI economy, you need the speed.
Yeah.
You can't wait 5 years to dig trenches. So you let the satellites in.
And the report says this is basically a template.
Exactly. They predict we're going to see this repeat in North Africa and the Middle East all year.
It really raises a weird question about sovereignty, though. If a U.S. company controls the sky gates, does the local government even exist in that loop?
In a practical sense, barely.
Mm-hmm.
Your internet provider, SpaceX, might hold more sway over your economic access than your local mayor. That is the western side of the split.
Brute force infrastructure.
High speed, physically bypassing the old world.
Okay, so that's the hardware side. Let's flip the coin to the east. The report shifts to ByteDance TikTok's parent company and their new AI, Dubow 2.0.
And this is the perfect counterpoint. While the West is launching satellites, the East is building what the report calls a soft firewall.
Soft firewall. That's an interesting term. I mean, usually we hear about the great firewall, hard blocks, banning sites. This sounds different.
It's very different. A hard firewall stops you from leaving. A soft firewall makes you never want to leave. Dubow 2.0 isn't just a chatbot like we're used to.
Yeah.
It's not, hey, computer, write me an email. The report calls it a lifelong agentic companion.
Which honestly sounds a little clingy.
It might seem that way to us, but the metrics do not lie. Its retention rate is 3 times higher than any Western competitor.
It's 5 times? Why?
Emotional resonance algorithms.
Emotional resonance. So it's not just recognizing my words.
Not at all. It anticipates. Yeah. Western AI is transactional. You prompt, it answers. Dubow is anticipatory. It tracks your context long term.
How so?
It knows your music taste has shifted to more melancholy tracks this week. It knows your calendar is slammed. So it doesn't just answer a query. It changes its tone. It might suggest a playlist before you even ask. It moves from search to anticipation.
That is wild. And the report puts a price tag on this intimacy. They estimate the value of this behavioral data at $150 billion by 2027.
Because it's the ultimate database of human behavior.
Mm.
But think about the geopolitical implication. This creates a cognitive empire.
Right.
If you're a user in Southeast Asia, why would you use Google? Google feels like a cold library. Dubow feels like a friend who knows you. You aren't blocked from Western sites.
You just stop caring about them.
That is the soft firewall.
Yeah.
You don't need a ban if the user never wants to leave the garden. It's a battle of efficiency versus emotional connection.
And right now, emotional connection is winning.
It's winning the retention war. Absolutely.
Okay, speaking of wars, let's get into the distillation crisis. This part of the report reads like an industrial espionage thriller. We have DeepSeek versus OpenAI.
Right.
What on earth is an algorithmic distillation attack?
It sounds super technical, but the concept is actually quite simple and devastating for the big labs. Imagine you have a student who wants to pass a complex exam, but they don't want to study. They just want the answers. Mm. So they follow a genius professor around and just ask them a million specific questions about the test, memorizing every answer exactly.
So DeepSeek is the student here.
That's the allegation. DeepSeek is accused of asking OpenAI's models millions of questions to basically reverse engineer their reasoning logic. They are distilling the genius of the OpenAI model into their own much smaller, cheaper model.
So they get the smarts without spending billions on R&D.
Exactly. It's algorithmic plagiarism.
Yeah.
And it threatens the whole industry with innovation stagnation.
Because why bother?
Why would you spend billions training the next model if your competitor could just steal his logic in a few weeks?
Yeah.
It breaks the whole economic incentive.
But OpenAI isn't just taking this. The report mentions something called logical watermarking. This sounded terrifying. It acts like a virus.
It's a fascinating countermeasure. It's a mathematical arms race. OpenAI has started embedding hidden statistical patterns, watermarks, into their output.
But I wouldn't see it.
To you and me, the text looks totally normal. But to a machine learning algorithm, it's a trap. If DeepSeek uses that data to train their model, the watermark activates and essentially degrades the stolen model's quality.
Whoa. So if you steal the data, your AI gets dumber.
It degrades, yes. It confuses the weights in the neural network. It's like a poison pill. Taking Game calls this the battle for the ownership of reasoning.
And that's really the defining conflict of 2026.
It is. It decides whether intelligence is a proprietary asset you can own or if it's just a public commodity.
Amazing. Satellites, emotional bots, and now invisible poison pills in our data. Let's ground this in the hardware for a second. The report has a sort of leaderboard for 2026 models. We have Gemini 3, DeepThink, and ZAI GLM-5.
And this is where we see that divergence in philosophy again. Google's Gemini 3 is all about accuracy.
The alternating inference architecture.
That's the model.
That's the sandbox thing, right?
Yes. Think of it like a writer with a really strict editor. Before Gemini gives you an answer, say a block of code, it runs it in a simulated environment first. It tests its own work.
So it's basically the death of the hallucination.
It's certainly the death of simple machine error. If the code have a bug, the AI finds it in the sandbox and fixes it before you ever see it.
But that takes time. It adds latency.
It does. And then you have GLM-5 from Z.I, and they're going for the complete opposite. Pure speed.
And efficiency. The report notes it hits 120 tokens per second on a phone.
Blindingly fast. Faster than you can read. But the real breakthrough is something they call intelligent neural density.
This is the watts per token war.
Right. Energy is the bottleneck of 2026. GLM-5 uses a sparse core architecture. So think of it like a brain where only the necessary neurons fire up.
So if I ask it a math question...
The part of the AI that knows about literature stays asleep. It literally doesn't turn on.
And the report says that cuts power usage by 30%.
Which is huge. We focus on who's smarter, but the winner of 2027 might not be the smartest model. It might be the one that doesn't melt the polar ice caps, to answer a simple question.
Efficiency is the new king.
It's becoming the primary metric.
So we have this smart, careful Google model and the fast, efficient Z.AI model. But then there's the tool that might put a lot of people out of a job. Let's talk about Codex Spark.
This is the heavy hitter for the workforce. GPT 5.3 Codex Spark. The report calls it an autonomous software architect.
Autonomous, that's the scary word.
It is. It's not just a coding assistant. It can analyze 10,000 lines of code in seconds.
Yeah.
It finds bugs, understands the dependencies, and it patches them.
The stat that just blew my mind was the time to market reduction, 60%.
A 60% reduction? I mean, that changes the economics of building software entirely.
Yeah.
If you're a startup founder, this is a miracle.
But the human cost is clear. The report explicitly warns this is a threat to junior developers.
Yeah, the phrase shift or perish is in there. It's brutal.
It is.
The days of getting paid a good salary to write basic boilerplate code, they're over. The new role is AI supervision. You are a writer. You're an editor. You're an architect.
It just feels like the ladder has been pulled up, though. If the AI does all the entry-level work, how do you even get your foot in the door?
That is the crisis. It forces hyper-specialization very, very early. You can't just be a coder. You have to understand systems. You have to be the one asking the right questions.
Well, on that cheerful note, sorry to any junior devs listening, let's pivot to something a little more fun. Gaming. Death Stranding 2 on PC. We have a date.
March 19th, 2026. Mark your calendars.
And it's not just a simple port. The tech here seems to be pushing boundaries again. Proprietary neural rendering.
Kojima is doing it again. They're using AI to predict light paths, AI ray tracing, before the graphics card even calculates them.
So it's blurring the line between cinema and gameplay.
It's hallucinating reality, but correctly. Tekken Game calls it the peak of Hideo art, meeting Silicon.
You picked up on something interesting about Sony's strategy here.
Yes. The fact that this is hitting PC so close to the console release, it signals the death of platform exclusivity. Sony realizes that to fight Microsoft's Game Pass, they can't just stay in their walled garden anymore. They have to be everywhere.
Cross-platform profitability. It's another wall coming down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just like data borders are dissolving with Starlink, the borders between PlayStation and PC are dissolving too. Everything is becoming fluid.
So let's zoom out. We've covered a lot of ground. We have the sky gates opening up. We have the soft firewall of emotional AI. We have a mathematical arms race over who owns logic.
It all comes back to that initial idea of the bifurcated internet. We really are seeing two distinct paths forward.
In the West.
You have this focus on safety, on intellectual property, on heavy hardware, Starlink, OpenAI, logical watermarking. It's very structural.
And in the East.
The East bow, ZAI, is focused on consumer efficiency, emotional connection, and what the report calls logic democratization through that distillation process.
It's faster, cheaper.
And it feels more personal, even if the underlying data sovereignty is murky.
And we're all just sitting in the middle trying to figure out cognitive sovereignty.
That is the ultimate challenge. The report mentions that neutrality is the new battleground. Places like the Middle East, Southeast Asia, that's where these two spheres are colliding.
Algorithmic diplomacy.
Exactly. Whichever side controls the inference engines, the AI brains of those regions will control the data gold of the 2030s.
It's a lot to process, but I think what sticks with me is that concept of the strategic Sunday, taking that step back.
Absolutely. The speed of change, 120 tokens a second, 60% faster software cycles. It's too fast for passive consumption. You have to actively decide where you stand. You can't just float downstream.
So here's the thought I want to leave you with, listener, and it's something you hinted at earlier. We talked about DAO 2.0 having emotional resonance.
Right, knowing what you want before you do.
And we talked about OpenAI watermarking its logic to prove ownership of reasoning. So if an AI can anticipate your needs better than your spouse, and if a corporation can legally own the very process of reasoning used to make decisions, are we actually programming consciousness? Or are we just building very, very convincing mirrors?
And if the mirror knows what you want before you do, who is actually making the decisions in your life? You or the algorithm?
That is the question of 2026. Cognitive sovereignty. So think about it. Maybe take tomorrow, your first strategic Sunday, to really mull that over. Pause, calibrate, and look at the horizon. Thanks for diving in with us.
We'll see you next time.